I want to begin by saying how pleased I am to be here and to thank Jason for the warm welcome. I do remember that service very well indeed. It was the first time that I've ever preached three times in the same service, and trust me, they were not all 20-minute sermons. It's also good to be here as the interim principal of Emmanuel College, and in that sense, recognizing and wanting to celebrate the long relationship the college has had with this congregation, one that is, in fact, lived out in many ways. Dr. Wright, in terms of Oregon, students who've been here over the years, and alumni like Jason, who've served here as ministry personnel. So I want to thank you for that support of the college, and I'm aware of it as I'm here today. That story from Luke's Gospel, Jesus' entry into Jerusalem on the commemoration of what we now think of as Palm Sunday, is one of very, very few stories from Jesus' life that are found in all four Gospels. Because, like Jesus' birth and also his arrest, crucifixion, and resurrection, this is an event we celebrate every year, we develop a composite of it. And we draw images from all four accounts and weave them into one picture. There's nothing wrong with that, and in fact, it is a perfectly natural thing to do. But there's also value in looking at how each gospel writer recounts the event. There are a number of details that are common, and yet each account is different. The difference shouldn't surprise us. When you or I tell a story from our past, we emphasize some elements and we give greater attention to others and less to a third category, depending on the audience and the context in which we're telling the story. And here, of course, we have four different storytellers, four different gospel writers. When we look at the Gospels, and indeed any of the gospel stories, we need always to remember that we are reading or listening to witnesses of faith. They weren't writing biographies or histories. To say that doesn't mean the stories don't contain biographical or historical detail. They do. But it is to say, as the writer of John's gospel puts it near the end of that particular story, particular collection of stories, and I quote, "Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that you might believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name." So with the Gospels, witnesses of faith, the emphasis on some elements and the ways things are recounted assume even greater importance. These writers made choices. There was nothing accidental here. So what might we learn from Luke's telling of this event? When I read through Luke's account thinking about today, I was struck by three things. First, Luke's emphasis is on Jesus' followers, his disciples. Unlike Matthew and Mark, Luke's account doesn't speak about a large crowd coming out from the city, folks drawn to come and see this increasingly well-known figure from Nazareth. No, in Luke's case, the emphasis is on those who have been following him, some from the beginning of his ministry and others who've joined at various points in time. Now, I know for myself, and I think I'm probably not alone, when I hear the word disciple, I tend initially to think about those 12 who are named. But as Luke makes clear, not only here, but elsewhere in his gospel, the disciples who followed Jesus around, women as well as men, were a, quote, a crowd, in fact, a large crowd. Luke never gives us a number, but he uses words like a multitude to describe them. And indeed, in Luke's account of the entry into Jerusalem that day, he speaks about, and I quote, "the whole multitude of disciples praising God," end quote, as Jesus journeys down from the Mount of Olives toward the city on a colt. Now, the fact he describes the scene in that way doesn't mean that there wasn't a crowd there, but that's not what Luke was concerned about. And indeed, we know from his account that some Pharisees were present. But his emphasis is on Jesus' disciples, his followers, what they did. And second, like Mark, like Matthew, in fact, like John, Jesus talks about those present putting their coats on, or cloaks on the colt, and on the ground as Jesus makes this journey down the hill into the city. But unlike the account in the other three Gospels, there's no mention here of those present cutting palm branches and placing them on the road. The lack of that mention doesn't mean it didn't occur, but the presence of that detail in the other three Gospel stories does make it likely, but Luke here makes no mention of it. And finally, related to both my points about the focus on the disciples and the lack of the mention of the cutting and waving of palms, Luke's account does not have that same political sense that you find in Mark or in Matthew's telling of the story. In Mark's and Matthew's accounts, the disciples probably, and the crowd definitely, saw Jesus as a potentially political Messiah, the long-promised ruler of Israel who might be able to rid them of the Romans and restore the country's greatness. That notion seems generally absent from Luke, not only in the account of Jesus' time in Jerusalem, his arrest, crucifixion, and resurrection, but also here. The disciples may well have had such thoughts of an earthly ruler or monarch, but that wouldn't be apparent in the way Luke presents the story. For Luke, these are the followers who've been with Jesus all along. Fred Craddock, New Testament scholar and preacher, put the matter in his commentary on Luke's gospel by saying, "These disciples may not understand the nature of Jesus' messiahship, but they are not fickle crowds who praise him at the beginning of the week and turn against him at the end. Indeed, as he puts it, and here I'll quote, the story, as Luke tells it, is less crowded and more subdued. It's an event of and for believers, and its meaning lies in Jesus and in their faith in him, meaning that is in no way related to public favor or disfavor, participation or non-participation." In saying that, I don't want to suggest these disciples get everything right. In the subsequent chapters that recount Jesus' arrest, crucifixion, and resurrection, in Luke's account, Peter will still deny Jesus three times. The disciples will still fall asleep when Jesus asks them to pray while he goes off a little bit from them to do the same. These disciples or followers will still disbelieve when three women from their company visit the tomb on Easter morning and come back to tell the rest of them that the tomb was empty, but that they saw two men in dazzling clothes who told them that Jesus had risen. What Luke portrays in this gospel, and especially in this story of Jesus entering into Jerusalem that we are remembering and celebrating today, is a group of disciples who are drawn to follow him on the basis of his message, what they've witnessed as their followers, and their conviction of who he is. They are not the fickle or the fair-weather friends. And maybe today that's the place for us to start. Often on Palm Sunday, we tend to focus on the crowds who praise Jesus, but then will later in the week call for his crucifixion. But maybe today, in this time and in this context, it's a time to focus, as Luke did in his gospel, on his followers and on those of us who would today be his followers. Being a follower of Jesus is always a challenge. In fact, it is always a challenge. It was then, and it is now. But our current context and time make it a challenge for two reasons in particular. One is the challenge of being followers and of trying to be the church now, 25 months or so into this pandemic. It's a challenge to keep going when for much of that time, none of us could be together here. And yes, we knew that other members of Metropolitan were present, viewing the live stream as we were, joined by others who'd not been part of Metropolitan in the past. We could do that. We could still hear that music that is so much a part of what makes worship here the rich experience it is. But for most of the last 25 months, we've been isolated. We gain strength and we gain courage from our following when we have the chance to be in the physical presence of others who are on that journey with us. And even as we come back together, we're conscious of people who were part of this congregation in March of 2020 and who've died since. And it's hard to be the church, and it's hard to hold on to those things that strengthen us in our witness when we've had to spend so much time apart from others. Others in this congregation and elsewhere, but others who would seek to be followers of Jesus. It's been hard to do those things that we would regularly do. For example, to reach out to the person who's checked into a back pew to see whether this is a place where they could explore the faith and learn from it. It's hard when those and other opportunities have not been present. And we wonder, and we worry a little about what shape things will be in as our normal activities resume, with the question mark lingering over it, for how long will we be able to resume in this way? And second, it's a challenge to keep going and to witness to our convictions about who Jesus is for us and for others when we're part of a society that's changed so dramatically in the last decade or two. Let alone, if you are of my age, and you reflect back over a generation or two. There are those among us, of whom I would be one, who remember and grew up in a time when most people in this city and in much of Canada were involved in either a Christian congregation or a Jewish synagogue. In my village in northeastern New Brunswick, where I grew up, it was a mark of opprobrium if you weren't involved in the Roman Catholic Church or the United Church, those being the two options in that village. But even for those who are here today who are younger and do not have a memory of those years, they, like me, like all of us, are aware of the challenge of trying to be a practicing Christian and for us to be the church in a society where the serious practice of any faith tradition, not just Christianity, but any faith tradition, is a highly countercultural activity. If you went to high school in the last 15, 20 years, and you were involved in church, you might have been the only one in your class for whom that was true. And indeed, these days, the attitude those of us who practice any faith tradition often meet from others is generally ambivalence and occasionally hostility. But the response is rarely positive. Learning or relearning how to witness to the faith, how to talk about why we're active members of a Christian community, or why we attend church, or why and how we practice the faith as we do. That's something we need to learn how to do, or learn how to do again. Learn how to have that conversation with the grandchild or the coworker or the friend who wants to know why we have the particular commitment we do, perhaps to the environment, or to housing, or to purchasing some things but not others. As I think back, it's a conversation my parents would have assumed the minister would have in a different era. And those can be awkward conversations, but they're ones we need to learn how to have again. And maybe on this Palm Sunday, we need to do what Luke records those followers of Jesus doing so long ago as he made his entry into Jerusalem. Maybe, like them, we need to make it a day when we celebrate, really celebrate, as in fact we did at the beginning of this service, to think about who Jesus is for us and to give God thanks and praise for his presence and for that gift. Yes, and to figure out what following and serving means in our time and place. Unlike his followers that day, we know what lies ahead for Jesus in terms of the rest of this week. But like his followers, we do not know the direction of our own particular journeys, in the same way that they did not know what direction their journeys would take later that week. So let us give thanks and celebrate today. Our remembrance later this week of the nature of his journey need not undercut making today a time to give glory, praise, and honor to Jesus, as that opening hymn in today's service reminded us. He is the one we've chosen to follow because he is the one in whom we've seen God most fully revealed. Such a time of thanksgiving, celebration, and praise, in the midst of others offering similar sentiments, whether they're here with us in the sanctuary or with us virtually, can strengthen each of us for that journey. Like those disciples of old of whom Luke wrote, who would soon come to know their own struggles and need to figure out how to be followers when Jesus was no longer with them, may we move into the challenges and the struggles of being his disciples now. In doing so, like those first disciples, may we find strength and sustenance from this time together, from these stories, and from the one who comes to us in these times and in these stories. And to our God, known to us in this one who entered Jerusalem that day so long ago, be glory, praise, and honor. Amen.